Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to NASM University Understand the ICD Clutter Hoarding Scale webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Monday, June 16th, 2014. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Mary Kay Vizey. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hello, everyone. This is Mary Kay, and I'm privileged to introduce our speaker this evening. But before doing that, I want to remind you all that my NASM colleague, Jennifer Pickett, will return to speak with you at the end of the hour to offer some closing reminders and instructions regarding tonight's NASM University audio seminar. Sheila Delson is our speaker this evening. Sheila is a CPO-CD Institute for Challenging Disorganization Level 5 Master Trainer. Sheila is actually a co-founder of ICD, the Institute for Challenging Disorganization, where she also served for over 8 years on the board of directors. Sheila is a past president and co-developer of the ICD certification program, as well as past certification director. Sheila is one of the original co-authors of the Clutter Hoarding Scale, and is a 2008 Judith Kohlberg Award recipient. Now in her 20th year as a professional organizer, Sheila's client base represents approximately 95% CD clients, of which approximately 60% are of the hoarding population. Besides hands-on organizing, she provides virtual organizing services to clients throughout the U.S., and offers a virtual organizing training program for professional organizers as well. Sheila is an active NAPO member and is the recipient of the prestigious 2013 NAPO Founders Award. Please welcome Sheila Delson to NASM University.
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, and welcome everybody to the NASM University. And to begin, I'd like to make some really important distinctions concerning the ICD Clutter Hoarding Scale, which are probably really valuable and will also help to demystify the scale's usefulness and purpose. And I'm wondering if how many of you on this call tonight may be somewhat familiar with the ICD Clutter Hoarding Scale. But tonight's call is to hopefully help to enhance the value of the Clutter Hoarding Scale to each and every one of you. So in the interest of time, I'm going to assume that you all have, or you will soon, read the scope of the scale, the guideline tool, and the parameters of the scale on pages 3 and 4 of tonight's handout. And besides, let's just take a look if you turn with me to page 6. And what I'm going to try to do is guide each of you through this very important progressive scale. And I want to really make that really clear to you. This is a progressive scale. The clutter hoarding scale is not just clutter hoarding. And that's probably one of the biggest misnomers. It is a clutter through hoarding scale. So we're going to talk about that in a few moments. So what I'd like us to do, if you could look at page 6, starting at page 6, there are 5 major assessment levels. And of those 5 major assessment levels, we look at levels 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And if you'll notice, they are all colored based on our U.S. security code system. And to be sure to note that the scale is a residential assessment tool. It is not intended to diagnose or label a person or a resident dweller. Incredibly important for all of us to know, this assessment tool is not about the person. We are only assessing the environment itself. Hugely important to know. Also, another important thing to note is the hyphen in the scale title. The document itself, as I mentioned before, is a progressive scale, and the hyphen represents clutter through hoarding, not just clutter hoarding, but clutter through hoarding. It does not suggest that clutter is hoarding. Really important distinction. Unfortunately, this has been a big source of confusion for a lot of people. And to add to the confusion, the acronym used without the hyphen at all only adds further confusion. So we want to make everybody understand that this is a clutter through hoarding scale. Really important to know. So taking a look at level on page 6, the 5 levels, each one again is basically according to the U.S. color security color system. Level 1 green, level 2 blue, which is guarded, level 3 is yellow, elevated, 4 orange, which is high, and 5 red, which is severe. I'm going to be mostly for all of you tonight focusing, especially as senior move managers, focusing on level 3. And I'll talk about that in a few moments. But again, this scale is progressive, and we're going to try to take all of the steps through tonight's teleclass into its total progression. Let's turn to page 7. So although there are, we always work in numbers of 5, unfortunately 5 levels having to do with heightened of degree. And then if you turn to page 7, there's 5 assessment categories. Within each level, there are 5 specific categories. And they are broken down into structure and zoning, animals and pests, household functions, health and safety, and of course, personal protective equipment. Incredibly important also. Let's just turn to page 7. I know that we're a little bit going to be short on time, and this may seem a little rushed, but if any of you have any questions after tonight's class, please feel free to call and contact me. I have no problem with that at all, doing so. So let's just take a look at page 8, just to do a quick overview of level 1. Level 1 has no special knowledge in working with chronically disorganized population. This is what we would call a level 1 is normal. Normal household behaviors. And if you'll notice going down this on the left-hand side, we have the structure and zoning, animals and pets, household functions, and so forth. And those are the main categories that we always focus on. So if you are working in a client's home as a senior move manager, these may be the main key pieces that you want to focus on. The levels of desertion for where a client may fall into may be a little bit more intuitive once you've read through the scale. So the main focuses we want everybody to focus on have to do with these 5 main categories: structure, zoning, animals, household functions, health and safety, and of course, anybody that goes in. If you need protective equipment, that probably is a big, huge high sign for you. So just taking a quick look under structure and zoning, and these are what we consider all of the to the right, all the descriptives of what would be necessary for a level 1. And if you'll notice, just reading through them, and I'm going to read through them with you, on level 1 under structure and zoning, all doors and stairways are accessible. Huge, by the way. When you go in, all doorways and windows are accessible. This has to do with major safety issues. And a lot of zoning codes are going to be looking for this, fire in, code enforcement and so forth. All plumbing, electrical, heating, ventilation is all functional. Installed and functional fire carbon monoxide detectors, and they always look for either the fire codes and the carbon monoxide. And under animals and pests, appropriate animal control, behavior and sanitation. You know, if you've got cats, is the litter cleaned? Do you smell excessive cat and or other animals and so forth? And you do need to use your olfactory senses. If you smell something that doesn't smell right, check it out or ask, or at least put it in the back of your mind if it's uncomfortable to even ask about. But the number of animals in compliance with the zoning regulations, Every single area in the U.S. has different zoning regulations. You may want to know what those are. And sometimes even if there's an unusual amount of pets that break those zoning regulations, as long as you know and you recognize that the pets are well cared for, there's no feces laying around, no other issues, you know, it may still be an okay thing that where it means the client is really managing it, which is a good thing. But in most cases, it's not, unfortunately. And household functions, you know, no excessive clutter where you're not tripping over things. All rooms are being used for their intended purpose. Household appliances are all functioning. Today I was in a brand new client where there is stuff piled on top of the stove in the oven area. Obviously, they're not using their appliances effectively. And also routine housekeeping and maintenance, excessive dust, clutter, debris, even on kitchen appliances or countertops, you see a lot of soil or food particles, and also in bathrooms, and I don't need to give that description. I'm sure you get that. Health and safety. And a lot of this is the same thing what I just described. Check for odors, animal food or other types of natural gases, medications, and that's another big thing, especially with seniors. I'm sure you all well know that has to do with managing medications. For senior move managers, if you're moving a client with medications, you need to make sure the medications are properly stored, maybe even properly labeled, dates, and also chaplain's lids if that's appropriate. And the other thing, which is the last one, personal protective equipment, we call it PPE. For those, especially us, going into a situation, hand sanitizers, always carry a flashlight. I cannot tell you how important a flashlight is, especially in excessively cluttered areas, for searching for things, for investigating what things are and where they are, is to carry one of those little tiny LED flashlights. Put it in your pocket. It sort of sits comfortably inside of even a bag that you might be carrying in. Incredibly valuable. Insect repellent with regards to fleas and sometimes moths and so forth that do attach to your clothing, even inside rodents. I can't tell you stories you don't even want to hear about, but insect repellent to spray at least the lower half of your body. And sometimes even body gear, maybe like an overcoat, which I'll show you later. So I just wanted to go through level one with you. We don't have photos at this time. There's a lot of legal issues around taking photos, especially for this type of a document. But consider level one being what you'd call normal household. I just wanted to go through all of these on level one so that you get a low-level profile of what is considered normal. So if you could just sort of, as we traverse through tonight's handout, just give yourself an introductory mental picture of just traveling through a level one, which you would think would be normal. And as we progress, I'd like to sort of build on that level one place in your mind to see how things progress. And again, this is a progression scale. Let's look at page 9, level 2. We consider this blue and guarded because you'll notice under structure and zoning, there may be one or more exits blocked, maybe one appliance, whether it has to do with air conditioning or heating systems that are maybe not working appropriately, or non-existing fire are carbon dioxide detectors, and almost in all states and counties, these are mandated to be in place. It's a safety issue, right? Structure and zoning safety. Under animals and pests, that there is evidence of inappropriate animal control. I can't even tell you. I've walked into homes where I've seen fish tanks that have been laid stagnant. And, you know, you think, okay, it's confined within a like a fish tank, whatever size it may or may not be. But I have to tell you, the spores that are growing inside of the tank that lay on top of the water, spores, mildew and mold spores, become airborne. And they infiltrate the air that you breathe. So that becomes a real health hazard. So don't, if you see anything like that that's not being cared for, you know, check it off in your own mind that this is really important. The fact that it's being ignored is also an identifying factor. Visible odor or pathways, and you can see through all of these. Household functions, a lot of clutter that obstructs functional key living areas. That for you would be also a big key a red flag. And especially for senior move management, for all of what you all do, oh my gosh, you know, it's what are we packing here if there's all this clutter? Trying to identify, sifting the wheat through the chaff is what are we packing, what are we going, and to identify them. And some of these things may also bring to a more to the surface of a client the situation that they're living in as well. And don't be so surprised if you don't get some sort of backlash from some of it. But it's important, I can imagine, for all of you to know. So under health and safety, and this is a big thing, health and safety is one of the things ICD and all of you senior move managers should always be aware of, is for the client's own physical health and safety, whether it's medications, hazardous storage, food preparation surfaces, laundry, toiletries, and the toilets, the bathrooms, and so forth, mildew, and so forth are huge. And also, what I want to talk to you about going down even further, if indeed even all of you or any of you or any of your team might be working in situations where you start coming across mildew in bathrooms or kitchens, is really important that they have the appropriate PPE to work with. This has to do with health and safety for even your own team. Let's take a look at level 3 on page 10. This is what I call the pivotal level. The pivotal level between being level 3, which is a low level, and it can pivot almost immediately to a high level. Level 3. And I'm just going to read with you. We consider level 3 as the pivot point between a household environment that can be assessed as cluttered and a household assessment that may require the deeper considerations of working in a hoarding environment. So this is the pivotal point between excessive clutter and hoarding. And we always talk about making sure that anybody working in a higher level 3 should have significant training in either chronic disorganization or within the hoarding realm, because that's really what happens here. So level 3 is a pivotal kind of point. It can be low level, it can be high level. But I want you to notice, if nothing else, as you're looking at this page compared to the other two, under structure zoning, animals, household functions, if you see those dots, the bullet points, they become longer, more detailed, more specific, and have, I'm almost going to say the word, they're a little bit more cluttered on the page, only because they're really addressing more severe onset, as you could probably see. We, on level 3, looking under health and safety. The reason why I'm focusing a lot on health and safety is we also talk many times about helping clients understand, and their family members as well, understand just trying to make things better and right. And under health and safety codes, we talk about health and safety as being the main primary focus. But for senior move managers and for all of you that are maybe moving a client into a new environment, this indeed has to be your main focus, making sure that however they end up being set up, health and safety become the main focus. This has to do with just human benefit environment. But if you think about it, under even health and safety, still overflows into things like beneficial household functions, animals and pests, making sure that the zoning and structure is all well. And, of course, if you're moving a client, most likely that will indeed already be evident. Let's take a look at page 11. Okay, this is level 4, and at this point, we are well into potentially what we consider to be a compulsive hoarding situation. And this is where the environment requires a collaborative team of service providers, not necessarily you, and not necessarily a professional organizer who is even trained working with a hoarding situation, but a collaborative team, because there's so many other issues that need to be addressed, specifically under structure and zoning. Certainly a professional organizer may be able to identify, and as well as you, senior move managers, identify structure and zoning or animal and pest issues, and even sometimes household functions. We do not fix or remediate any of these particular situations. So we need to make sure that we are able to call in a collaborative team of service providers that can facilitate. And sometimes it involves family members or clergy or other friends and family. And a lot of times, I have to tell you, what we've seen is by level three and four, we're starting to really look at a more senior population. And I know that probably all of you are aware that as the senior population grows, there are more needs to hold on to things, less ability to throw out, more of an attachment to emotional memories. So everything has value. And unfortunately, the insight that becomes what we call poor insight into their immediate environment, whether they are even themselves not being well cared for or in an environment that's not healthy and beneficial for them as well, because of the emotional stigma that is really attached to how their things are. We see this a lot with seniors and the elderly. So by level 4, if you have hit an understanding or an environmental assessment that your client is at a level 4, this may really be an enormously huge red flag. And there's going to have to be a lot of other professionals pulled in, whether we call them health professionals, social workers, maybe even sometimes pest and animal control. We also talk about crime scene cleaners, not necessarily always at level 4, but sometimes. And other people that are mental health, as far as mental health professionals need to maybe be involved. And I have to tell you, even myself, if I hit a level 3 client, I tell them right away that I won't work with them unless I know that they are working with a clinical therapist. Because there are so many emotional connections to all of their things, their place, their space, that they don't always have really good insight into things that are actually doing them harm. So we as outsiders coming inside need to really be very cautious and careful about the language that we use when we speak to a client, not to sound accusative or judgmental. Again, this is an observational tool. This is not about judging the character of the person. It's about talking to a client about concern for their welfare. I think that has to be the major focus. The reason for the clutter hoarding scale, by the way, is to be able to create that sense of objectivity, so that if you are using an assessment scale, and by the way, if you come into a situation that you are concerned about, please download and copy the clutter hoarding scale and give it to your client and say, you know, it might be a really good idea. Why don't you take a look at this scale and give me an idea of where you think you might fall into this? And give it 2 or 3 days. They'll come back to you almost guaranteed. If it's really a compulsive hoarding situation, the client will almost always underscore themselves. Gives you the opportunity to come back and say, well, you know, as a professional looking at this, I think I'd like you to look at the next level based on, and this is not based on your judgment, you can use it based on some of the facts shown in the scale itself. And you may be able to go by point by point, all these little bullet points, and start to notate some of the violations that you're talking about, and don't use the word violation, by the way, to your client, but you know what they are. Just point by point, it creates an objective viewpoint where you're not judging the client, you're just checking out the environment. So I think for you to be able to go forward as a senior move manager and to be able to gain and entrust the trust of your client, the objectivity is huge. And then offering them, and the ability at that point, to offer them the help needed to be able to make the next challenging step in order to make the move. So that's really important. Let's look at page 12, which is level 5. And at this point, we are well into what we call not just compulsive hoarding, but even a little bit more deep. And as again, if you'll notice, under each one of the zones, you'll see that the bullet points have increased. If you want to just take a second to flip back to level 1, just so that you can see, which is on page 8, you see all the space on level 1, maybe 3-4 bullets, and even those are not violations, those are normal, as compared to page 12, which is level 5. So level 5 household environment will require intervention from a wide range of professionals. And these are not organizers or even yourselves that should probably even be involved at a level 5. Indeed, involves a collaborative team, a lot of different types of helpers, include family, mental health professionals, social workers, building managers, zoning and fire or safety agents. At this point, you are really in a really deep situation. I am going to suspect that as senior move managers, you probably won't be involved very much with a client at this particular level, only because there's going to need to be so much more other intervention. There's conservatorships to be concerned with, guardianships, custody, other kinds of eviction situations. I'm thinking that maybe this level you won't have all that much direct involvement. I could be wrong, but if you ever did find yourself in this, red flag, back out. Just make sure that you are able to make connections with the proper next level of help that the client may indeed need. And as you can see at the top of this, there are many, many options. I think for you to be able to make an assessment to figure out what those options may or may not be, you may find yourself at that point already a little involved with some of those other help options, even having to do with building and legal proceedings managers or superintendents in multi-dwelling buildings and so forth. And multi-dwelling buildings, I have to say, if you are working in a major city situation or population, the clutter hoarding scale becomes even more valuable because it involves and affects so many other people who are multi-dwelling, co-dwelling with the client in their particular environmental situation that impacts others. So this has been very, very well received on many, many levels, as particularly the assessment for the environment, which, of course, you know, you can imagine building owners and legal fractions absolutely love to use as a guideline, and so should we all. So just moving along, I want to talk specifically about on page 13, moving forward. This is really an important point. One of the confusions that we have seen throughout a lot of the discussion, not just for the clutter hoarding scale, but so many of the many hoarding shows on TV, is a missed distinction and sort of a blurred vision between, you know, clutter, hoarding, and domestic squalor. We also have seen a lot about animal hoarding. And again, I think there's this big blurred vision sometimes on these shows that do a takeaway segment on explaining what's going on specific to each one of those other pieces. Everything becomes very blurred and maybe also lumped into one big giant ball of wax. So it's really important, if you all hear nothing else, compulsive hoarding does not necessarily mean squalor situations. It also doesn't necessarily require animal hoarding. So compulsive hoarding does not always involve animal hoarding or squalor. Point. Next sentence. Almost always squalor situations, severe domestic squalor, do involve animal hoarding, animal miscare, and always compulsive hoarding. So that is a really important distinction to make. A lot of my clients, I work personally with the level 3 and 4, mostly level 3, high level 3 and 4. Even I know better than to try to work on a level 5 on my own. I won't, unless I know I've got a really supportive team around me. But when it comes to severe domestic squalor, we're talking high level 5. So, and as you'll look through this, and I really wanted to point this out to you all as a really important distinction. You know, the clutter through hoarding scale levels 1 all the way, we start at level 1 so that you have a baseline. Everybody understands what level 1 is. By level 3/4, now you're into really important highlighted areas that are more intense in our involvement, especially as senior move managers. What are you moving? What are you not moving? What stays? What has to go? How is it going to go? It becomes a lot more detailed, intense, and creates an awful lot of extra hyper-focus. But on page 14, under severe domestic squalor, I don't assume that any of you will actually choose to work in this particular type of an environment, but just for identifying purposes, it's about accumulated filth and dirt. Just look at these bullet points with me on page 14. You know, rotting food, exploding cans all over the place. I worked with a client a number of years ago. It was more like a level 4 sliding into a 5, where it was an apartment building situation. And the refrigerator had not, talking about rotting food, the refrigerator had not been accessed in over 10 years, and it was running. I mean, the motor was running, and the debris in front of the refrigerator was, I'd say, almost two-thirds up the front door. It took us 3.5 weeks, me working alone with a client, slow process, just to remove the items, without traumatizing the client. And that's another thing is, oh my gosh, even with regards to moving, you know, moving, sometimes you've got deadlines to do, so you don't have the option of being able to take the client through every single step. In my situation, I did have that luxury. It took us 3.5 weeks just to go through every single step in order to clear the door of the refrigerator so that we could actually open it. And after 10.5 years, I got to tell you, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. Actually, the whole entire refrigerator was actually redeemable. It took a number of hours and an awful lot of cleaning people to come in and do their thing, but the refrigerator was redeemable, and that was to the clients. She was thrilled. And, oh my gosh, so was I. But those are the things to watch for. And again, you know, as move managers, you know, what is going to go? What is going to stay? Where is the client going to be living? What is their environmental situation? And again, does the client want to re-impact their current situation and their stuff into a new environment? And by the way, this question is not just for you. By this level, this question should probably be more posed and have more resulting involvement and answers based on some of your other team members, whether they're mental health professionals, health professionals, or wherever this person is going to be moving to, family members. Some family members want to take some things for themselves. You get the picture. But the most important thing is to remember that severe domestic squalor does almost always involve compulsive hoarding, but not necessarily the other way around. That's pretty huge. And then also the proper disposal of prescription drugs. And this has been well researched, and I know that as senior move managers, I'm sure you see all kinds of, let's just say, creative ways to store and manage medications. I was in a client 2 or 3 days ago who actually was using shoebox sorters to sort through all of the managed medications, because some medications come in for 3 months, 3 months supply, and others come in 30 days supply. Some of them are older than others. Some of them aren't taken on time, so then there's leftovers. And it can become a real almost nightmare. So disposal of, then we're going to say, outdated prescription drugs. And this is the current suggested outline. And if a drug take-back program is not available, and usually that might be through a local pharmacy, then these are the FDA recommended requirements. And as you can see down, remove the prescription drugs from their original containers, remove them, which I thought originally was a little odd, but mix the drugs with an undesirable substance. And I have used both of these, kitty litter and coffee grounds. And used kitty litter and obviously used coffee grounds. And there's a reason for that. Most likely, it's very, very highly likely that humans and animals will not necessarily dig through the feces of another animal, and coffee grounds are usually undesirable. So those are probably the safe ones. And then they suggest that you throw them directly into the garbage, not into a compost or anything else, put them into a sealed bag or container. And then it depends also, by the way, and it's a good thing to check, every county has usually a hazardous waste outlet in your county or your state, and to go online and check it out and find out what exactly are the codes and the recommendations within each one of your areas for removing of hazardous drugs or medications. So additionally, we have other resources on page 16 that are really, really helpful for you, especially if you're working with this particular population or find yourselves involved in this population. If you're working with seniors, it is so, so prevalent. Sad to say, but also true, that that you could find yourself involved in a situation where, you know, you're not really sure what to do or how to handle some of these situations. So there are free fact sheets that you're welcome to look up. They're all free, very directed to working especially with a senior population. So at this particular point, I'd like to ask if anybody has any questions or concerns about the use of the ICD Clutter Hoarding Scale, or even direct situations that you may have encountered with any of the clients that you've worked with up to this point.
And our first phone question comes from the line of Nick Fartland. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. We're working with a woman right now who is older, and I would probably, I mean, I'm just guessing off the top of my head, but I'd probably put her at about a level, like high level 2, low level 3. I'm not really sure. But
okay.
She gets, like, really, hello?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Did you hear the first part? Or?
Yes, I heard you well. Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah, we're working with her, and our biggest problem is that she has no family around, no one for us really to go to help us. And she gets really flustered and, like, upset, and it's very difficult to deal with. And I was just wondering what your suggestions are for someone who's not necessarily up in, like, the hoarding level, but still fights kind of every step of the way.
You know, that's a really good question, because this is not only just about the clutter hoarding scale. The clutter hoarding scale really was developed based on a lot of human behavior. And what you've just described is so typical of a senior. I'm assuming, can I ask you, is this senior that you are preparing to move?
Yeah, she's got a limited amount of time to get out of her house, so we have to move kind of quickly, but she is really fighting us every step. Every step we take, she wants to push back and take two steps back. So.
Okay, so this is very typical, I have to tell you. And you know, in all fairness to her, I think the first thing is to understand where she's coming from, and I always recommend that. Understand the client first, where she's coming from. She's feeling very threatened and frightened, obviously. And although it may not be a level 3, level 2 has, you know, even that has, you know, considerable amount of, quote, stuff to decide about.
Mm-hmm.
And you said she has no family at all. I think what might be really important at this point, especially for you, would be to see if you could investigate if there's, you said there's no family, but there may be friends or clergy. And at some point, if she has a therapist or any other kind of health care professional that she's working with or has been working with, and there has to be a reason for what precipitated this need to move. The people involved in the need to move may also be able to partner with you in helping her make this transition. Is obviously, from what I'm hearing you say, the transition, the move is urgent in some form. So who are the people involved in making, who called you? In other words, who called you on site?
It was her, I believe it was her son, but they're, you know, they're kind of, I don't know, it's hard to say it, like, there are some of those people that they want to just pay to have it finished. They don't really want to deal with it themselves, so they're signing a check, but they have no involvement.
But there must be other people involved somewhere, whether it's a health professional, mental health professional, geriatric care nurse. And if there is not, it would be highly recommended that you find somebody for her, because alone, for you to do this alone with her sort of doing so much pushback, she's feeling very threatened, and she needs to know that she's got people on her side that are looking out for her welfare and who are carefully listening to her and can maybe even help some of the psychological issues she's dealing with. You can't really do this alone. Even under the circumstances that you just described, this is going to be absolutely painful for her and extremely, let me say, ineffective for you as far as cost management goes. So you need help. You need her to get some help, and it would be great if you could find some way to find that help for her. Somebody else has to be involved someplace besides just the family. Maybe ask the son who else is involved. Where is this going? Who are the people she's going to? All those questions. Be broad and open about all the questions she could possibly think of. That's going to help you help her.
Okay, thank you very much.
I hope that's helpful.
That is, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, and our next question comes to the line of Diane Chen. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
You mentioned a little while ago about maybe even using the scale to talk with a client.
Yeah.
And in particular, we seem to have a lot of level three clients lately. Can you just speak a little more to how that might look and how to do that in a way that wouldn't, you know, create a defensive reaction from the client?
Well, of course, you know, there's no guarantees that you're not going to get a defensive reaction. However, every person is different, right? I think every situation is different. So, but having said all of that, I think the scale's value is in that it is exactly as it states, an environmental assessment tool. It's not about judging the person. This is about recognizing and judging the space. So I think for a situation like what you just described is to give the client the scale and, important, not just ask them to glance through it. Ask them to really read through it, because if you'll notice in the first front pages, and when I started this call tonight, it's really assuming that all of you have read all of the precursors to each one of the levels. It gives such a different perspective and overview of why the scale was designed, what its purpose is, and how it affects each one of the levels. So I think if you have a client that's, you know, willing to even intellectually look at this, and this is, you know, give them an intellectual approach with it, kind of like sort of half, you know, half on the cuff, I'd really like you to give this a look. This is something I've learned about recently. Might be really helpful for both of us. For both of us to know how to move forward as a team. And, you know, if you could talk about team as opposed to you being above the client, we are a team. So let's look at this as a team. So why don't you look at this on your own? I'll see you next week, and let's do, you know, comparatives to what I see and what you see. So kind of make it, I don't want to say a game because I don't really like playing games with clients. But make it more of a comparative communication, you know, with the client. So tell me what you think you saw, and then they'll give you their overview, and you'll say, okay, let me just tell you, as a professional coming in, I see this, and you may want to highlight some of the things that you see, but you need to know that you have an explanation for why. So, in other words, I noticed this appliance is not being used for their intended purpose because right now you have, you know, a whole pile of papers on top of the range, the cook range. And that, to me, would signal health and safety issues. So, you know, what do you think about that? And tell the client. And here's the other thing. Whenever I work with a client under these situations, I tell them, look, this is not about you. This is about the stuff in your environment. And I got to tell you, my first concern is always going to be about your health, safety, and comfort. I care about you. This is not about, excavating the stuff. It's about excavating you from any of the stuff that could do you harm. That is my big concern. So I think if you always can sort of focus it back as you being, you know, their cheerleader, you're the one looking out for them, not the one looking over them or at them. You're working with them, for them. That it's all about the language around it. Does that help at all? Does that explain a little differently?
It helps a lot. It really does. Thank you very
much.
Yeah.
Now, let me just also preface that by saying that does not mean that a client or somebody sometimes might still give you pushback.
Mm-hmm.
If indeed you still get pushback, you know, I got to tell you, at that point, you need to know for yourself whether this is a client for you or not.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of pushback may signal other things going on. If it seems like you're constantly getting pushback like that, it may be a signal for you to know and recognize it's not the client for you to work with.
Yeah. Great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Teresa Cummins. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. You keep referring to, you know, if these are clients that we're not comfortable dealing with, so we should refer them. And where's our resources for getting that? Who's the professional therapist that we need to go to? Where do we find those people?
That's a good question, and it's a hard one to answer because it depends so much on the situation, the client, the family involvement, if there's other people involved when they hire you, or they call you, who else is involved directly with the client. That is a really difficult one to really answer. But I guess the more broad answer for all of that is, I think you have to go back to your own particular resources based on the initial call itself, who called, if it's a family member, if it's I've gotten phone calls from court references, from attorneys and lawyers and geriatric care practitioners. So, you know, if you get that call from whoever the initial call came from, it would be to go back to them and let them know what you have discovered in your first assessment, your first on-site call, your concerns, and let that other person maybe be the next line of recommendation for where to go at that point. Now, sometimes family members don't know. I had one client actually this morning who has actually had her mother living in a situation where she wanted me to come in, the daughter wanted me to come in and fix the situation. Well, the mother doesn't want me to do anything, zero, nothing, except for maybe to rearrange, you know, rearrange the chairs on the Titanic, so to speak. And I realized that there is so much pushback. But what I also realized is that this is a huge issue having to do with elder abuse. And I, as a professional organizer, am not mandated to report, but I'll tell you who is. The people coming in who are doing, food, they do the food delivery thing, Meals on Wheels. Those people, yeah, they are mandated. If they see any kind of signs or symptoms of abuse or neglect or safety issues and so forth, they are mandated to report. And this one Meals on Wheels lady came in and went right to the client and said, well, I'm really worried about this. We are all worried about this. We've showed up for weeks and weeks and months and nothing's changed. We're worried about fire. We're worried about your health care. The place smells like urine, and she's sleeping in it and sitting in it, and she won't let health care professionals in. And that's kind of what I walked into this morning. And on the way out, this woman said to me, she looked at me, are you a family member? Because if you are, you are liable. Do you realize you're liable? And I said, no, first of all, I'm not a family member. And yes, I understand the situation, and we're on it. That was the best I could say. But to me, that was a huge red flag. So I don't know if this is really answering your question other than to give you a scenario where what I did this evening when I came back from this client was call the daughter who initially called me. And I said to her, you need to know that this is a huge red flag. Your mother is really in a situation where it is she's being physically not cared for, and others have her on the radar, and you need to take care of this ASAP. So figure out what that is. I'm happy to work with you. Call in others, and mental health and geriatric care have got to be called on the scene because this is really serious. So that's when you need to go back and pull on other resources, obviously not just your own.
Okay. Hope that helps. Is there an association of therapists? Is there a website of therapists that I can go to find this? I haven't.
Yeah, no. I have to tell you, not on a broad level, but what you may want to do within your own particular area is Google your area for psychotherapists, and you may want to also specify anxiety disorders. Or
okay.
Yeah, or not just anxiety disorders, but maybe even, you know, senior abuse situations. You just put in the Google thing, you know, do all the data that you could possibly look in your area that maybe something will come up. And at that point, you know, you might be able to get a resource. Also, you should have within your own community or county some sort of mental health association, and you should be able to find that either in Yellow Book pages or again, Google within your own regional area. And if you have a mental health association close by, they will also be able to refer you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, if there are no further questions, then we would like to thank Sheila for her very enlightening presentation tonight. I know that I personally was fascinated. So thank you, Sheila. Thank you all for participating tonight.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.